Dr. Doug Wilson, former medical academic, medical director of with a pharmaceutical company, the local branch of a pharmaceutical company, consultant, author of Aging Well, is on. Are you on Zoom, Doug?
I'm on Zoom, yeah.
I know. You sound like you're a long way away. Talk to me again.
Well, we've got a storm outside at the moment, so the rain is beating on the tin roof.
All right. Is that, I'm just looking at the operator, you're sounding good. Well done. Now, the first Alzheimer's drug to be, I don't know, for 20 years has just been allowed onto the market. The FDA has approved it, but it's a long and winding road. And I wondered if you could explain it to me, please.
Of course. The issue has been that for many, many years there is a belief. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. For many years, there's been a belief that one of the primary causes of Alzheimer's disease is depositions of a protein that is unnecessary, beta amyloid in chunks within the brain, and that these then interfere with the nervous transmission and interfere with your capacity to think. And if you got rid of that stuff, then it might clarify things and you might go back to normal or at least have a recovery to some extent.
So it's been regarded as a cause rather than a symptom, the plaques.
It's both sides have been offered up. And I think the important one is that if this were this to be a cause, then, of course, removal of the beta amyloid might make a difference. However, that hypothesis has not yet been proven. There have been there's been studies in support and there have been studies against. The ultimate one has been essentially with studies of nuns in the United States who donated their brains when they died, and a group of those who had clinical Alzheimer's had deposits of beta amyloid, but other ones had none whatsoever. So the picture is somewhat confusing. But at this stage, the company Biogen in the United States had in-licensed a monoclonal antibody from another company. And in conjunction with the Japanese company Eisai, we're now developing this as a potential therapy for people with Alzheimer's disease. Now, they did this by, this was a an infusion given intravenously once a month. And they studied the patients over for about 18 months. And during this time, they did a number of tests of their cognitive function. And at the same time, they took imaging, positron emission tomography, PET imaging of their brains, where they could quantify the amount of beta amyloid that was there. The objective was the monoclonal antibody would bind onto the amyloid. That would then be collected and cleaned up by the garbage system. And if all went well, then as the beta amyloid disappear, the patient should start to demonstrate some improvement in their cognition. They ran two very large studies, 1,600 patients in each study. Near the end of the follow-up time, they were concerned that the results from the first of the two studies appeared to be negative. So they ran the data from the two studies together in what's called a futility analysis. And the consequence of that was it suggested, even before they had all the information in, that they weren't going to get a positive message between the two studies, so they might as well abandon it. However, they did continue on till the end because they had some more data to come. And at that stage, they felt that with the last information coming in at the highest dose in the second study, that there was some improvement in cognitive function with the patients. Not a significant difference, but it was about 23% lower loss of cognitive improvement, a double negative. So people's cognition was going downhill as the disease progressed, but it went downhill less when they were getting the new drug, the new Alzheimer's drug,
Has their name. So it slowed the progression in some.
It slowed the progression. So at this stage, they sent it to an advisory committee hearing. Now, advisory committees are independent committees that report to the FDA, and their objective is to get together a group of experts in the field under question and try and give them an opinion at a time when the FDA says we're not quite sure. in this circumstance, the advisory committee met, and I've spoken at a number of the advisory committees in the United States. They're public meetings, most of them, and you get about 300 or 400 people who come and listen, the competitors of the sponsor companies as well. And at this meeting, the advisory committee decided in response to a final question, was there enough primary evidence of effectiveness of the drug for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease at all? And the answer to that was no from 10 of the 11 members, and one couldn't be certain. So in effect, it was like being universal to say, well, you put all the information together for us, and what we conclude is you don't have enough primary evidence that your new treatment is effective.
So you would think that for Biogen, that would be the end of that particular road?
Exactly. Now, there are circumstances on rare occasions when the FDA goes against the advisory committee's recommendations, not very often and not certainly in a very controversial situation like this one. It then became apparent afterwards that for a period of some months, there's been some behind the curtains discussion between two or three of the senior members of the FDA and Biogen principals. In effect, they were having discussions to find out, might there be a different way to handle the information and different way to perhaps get an approval of the drug, even if it's not a major approval, but there is a process called accelerated approval, which can be based on a surrogate marker associated with the disease, in this case, beta amyloid levels associated with Alzheimer's disease.
You make it sound a bit shady. Is that?
The question is, to some extent, Kim, you're right. There are a number of people who believe this has got a little shady behind the discussions, because most discussions with FDA are formal, they are documented, and so the information can go back and forth and can become public. These discussions were private discussions. The FDA doesn't believe they've done anything particularly wrong, but as you say, it sounded a little shady. So at this stage, people thought, well, this is not much is going to happen, because they had the FDA advisory committee hearing that says, no, we don't believe we've got enough there. And suddenly on June the 7th, the FDA came out with a decision. The drug is approved under what they call accelerated approval, based on a reduction of the beta amyloid assessed by this PET imaging. And they suggest that this treatment, even though they could not confirm clinical benefit, that this treatment would be open to all Alzheimer's patients, even without evidence of clinical benefit.
So that means that Biogen has a money-making machine on its hands.
It's extraordinary. So the next thing, they did have an obligation to complete a third major study, to try and collect enough information that the clinical benefits would accrue pari passu with the loss of the beta amyloid. However, they were given up until 2030 to complete that study, 9 years from now, which people thought was absolutely ridiculous. And so here you've got a process, namely the reduction of beta amyloid, which a number of people do not feel is the cause of Alzheimer's. And secondly, you don't need to have clinical data that is absolutely convincing, because although the data was somewhat moderate rather than potent. And at this stage, you've got the issue for Biogen being a moneymaker, absolutely extraordinary. So within a couple of days, three members of the advisory committee resigned. They said, we cannot support this condition. This decision, and there was widespread conflict about the label, to say that beta amyloid is a trigger for clinical disease, but it's not, because of the negative studies. And some of the descriptions have described this as the worst decision ever for the FDA. So that if that wasn't bad enough, the next thing that happened is Biogen announced that the cost of this would be around $56,000. American dollars per year for each individual patient.
Oh.
And if you think of that, Kim, if you had 1 million patients and there are 6 million people with Alzheimer's disease in the United States, 1 million patients would cost around $56 billion. most of this is covered by Medicare, which is the government's own fund for people who cannot afford drugs. That has an annual budget of $35 billion. But suddenly 1 million of these people would swamp the budget absolutely and completely. And if you had 2 million patients, you'd be looking at something over $100 billion.
Doug, given the doubt about the efficacy of this drug, do you not think that Biogen should be made to give it out for free and study it further?
Well, then, in fact, you're almost quoting some of the external reviews. There is an external body that reviews information for specialist groups and for hospitals and for insurance companies in the United States, and they assessed the fair return for the drug as requiring a discount of between 85 to 95%. Which, of course, would change all the dynamics completely. Now, at this stage, there are more players that were coming into the mix. The FDA is headed by a commissioner, and the FDA's role, of course, is very large. It's not just approving drugs. It is the FDA, is the Food and Drug Administration. So it's also responsible for the safety of foods within the United States. It's responsible for medical devices. It's responsible for vaccines. It has an extraordinary range of capacity. The commissioner stands atop all this one. And at the moment, the acting commissioner is a woman I know quite well, Janet Woodcock. She's been vacillating. The appointment, in fact, is made by the president. And so he hasn't quite got to grips with this yet. So she remains in a position where her appointment, when it becomes permanent, is responsibility of some of the senators in the House, a number of whom don't like her very much. So the issue now is, Janet Woodcock says, well, although she was previously head of the drug division, which is the division that gave this approval in the past, she said she's had stood back from this decision because she was doing the overview thing, and she supports her team. But as the hostility between people has got worse and worse, she, along with other groups, have decided she will request a review of the internal proceedings of the FDA around this decision of an individual who's called the Inspector General, based within the Ministry of Health in the United States, to examine the validity of the interactions and to see if they've been fair and above board. So you can't get more complex than someone who is seeking external review of their own departments to find out if they've been doing something a little bit shady.
Yeah. I mean, all this is a sign of the desperation for something that might ameliorate the epidemic, the coming epidemic of Alzheimer's. I don't think that's...
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Kim, and the desperation for the family members and those who've got early Alzheimer's was a significant factor in pushing toward this decision. And they, of course, were able to speak at the advisory committee hearing with personal stories of how disturbed things were, and that even a small glimmer of improvement, because there was certainly some improvement, even some small glimmer of improvement was worth continuing on. So at this stage, the FDA suddenly, instead of leaving the approval to be for anybody with Alzheimer's disease, changed their mind and said, we'll have to limit the approval only to early and mild disease, because that's the one that's most likely to respond. And those were the patients they studied. So however they got the original approval to say anybody with Alzheimer's disease might be eligible for this drug, we don't know. Now, America being America, Kim, you realize there is a community there who loves publicity, and that is the Congress. So at this stage, the two of the politicians have already started hearings within the House on the validity of the support practices that have gone on to get approval for the drug. And at this stage, and in parallel, these people who support the Medicare, the government funding agency, says we have to have changes because we'll go completely bust unless we have changes in the amount of money that is paid or the number of politicians who were there. So at the moment, poor Janet Woodcock is now under serious challenge, particularly from Democratic members of Congress.
And you think this is unfair?
I don't think it's unfair. I think the whole thing has been a mess,
If
you think of it. And I think that the clarity from the advisory committee is what they needed. That gave them the information that they were proceeding with. But at the same time, the approval, of course, was given release for other medications that are in the pipeline by other companies. So other drugs say, well, if our drug can be approved as yours is on the basis of the surrogate, and the surrogate is cleaning up the beta amyloid in the brain without a clinical benefit at the same time, then that's what we're going to get approval for. So the door is suddenly open by virtue of this decision for other companies to get their anti-beta amyloid treatments approved without having clinical data, which, of course, is a series of great concern.
And a bad precedent, same time, I imagine.
It's one of those nasty words that the FDA is always worried about. We don't want to create a precedent.
Yes.
In this instance, they just have. So at this stage, you've now got the information going out to the large hospital groups. And one of the most prestigious in America is the Cleveland Clinic. And as of the day before yesterday, they have decided they will not proceed with using the new treatment, aducanumab, which is a lovely name. And I think that the issue there is, once you get some of the hospitals stopping that, then in fact the desperation for those people who believe that any small amount of benefit is worthwhile, all that hostility and all that pain will continue to increase at this stage, because people will feel that their opportunities for success have been suffocated under this circumstance, and more heads will roll or something's going to happen. It's a terrible mess.
There has been a speculation, Doug, that Aduhelm might be a drug approval pathway for the treatment of Parkinson's, which, of course, you're intimately involved in.
Yes.
Are you thinking that this is the case?
It's only become apparent recently, Kim, that the Parkinson's story is a separate protein that may or may not have an association with the progression of the disease. It's fairly recent. I'm aware of it now, and I've not dug into the depth of that, because certainly in the situation where I'm at the moment, being 1 year out from having a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, I'll be increasingly interested in whatever possibility exists to modify the clinical features of the condition. Otherwise, it's just a piss off.
Yes. Yes, that is one word for it, or two. While we're on the subject of vaccines with regard to COVID, let us talk about a completely different one, a malaria vaccine. Malaria is responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths every year. Why has a vaccine been so difficult to make?
I think this one of the easiest figures around that is the fact that the malarial parasite, Plasmodium, has around 5,000 genes. Coronavirus, for which we have a vaccine, has 15. So therefore, the target for the Plasmodium to have some feature on its surface that can be picked up by an antibody or by active T cells is far more complicated. And as the parasite goes through different stages, it goes injected into the blood by the mosquito, then has a period of residence in the liver where it matures, just like going to university. Then it comes out into the bloodstream, now far more active, and gets itself distributed. And so it has these different stages, and the various proteins on their surface change. However, a few years ago, GSK, and about along with the Walter Reed Institute in Washington, developed a vaccine which was somewhat mild in terms of its effect, but over 1 year it seemed to reduce malaria symptoms by around 56%. And you compare that with the COVID vaccines, which are looking at 95%, and by 36% over 4 years.
So are you saying they stop you getting malaria or they merely...
No, they cut the symptoms, and they do prevent for people who haven't had malaria. It can prevent them.
All right.
But it's not very stable. It doesn't have a long duration of benefit. The new vaccine is called R21, and this has come from the University of Oxford, the Jenner Laboratory, the laboratory that produced the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. And they've been working on this for a number of years. And their recent data, which has come out with a study of over about 4,000 kids in Malawi, Kenya, and Ghana, suggested there was around 77% protection of the little kids. So they were aged between 5 to 17 months when they got their three shots. And so, therefore, anything that could produce the potential for an improvement like that is of monumental value, provided that data is sustainable. And they've just started a very large 4,000 patient phase 3 study, and we just wait to hear what that is. But as it's an extraordinary complex area to get into.
Because it's such a complicated parasite.
Because it's such a complicated parasite, Kim, and there are so many different options. The proteins change. They get the protein which they believe is most susceptible to the vaccine are those that are resident on the parasite after it's been injected by the mosquito. And after it's come out of the liver, it's undergone some changes, so it may be a little less effective at that stage. So, but if it has a consistent 75 plus benefit, well, then that will be absolutely wonderful. But it does tell us, doesn't it, Kim, that when you hear about issues in different countries with regard to those people who are anti their vaccination, how the world is changing so hugely at the moment. The recent figures for COVID-19 out of the UK are something like 96% protection from being hospitalised with COVID-19.
Well, preventing the disease getting serious enough to require hospitalisation would seem to be a huge thing.
It is, and you wonder what's going to happen in the United States, with different states of the United States, with those who are pro-vaccination and those who are not, because it's already going to end up in a few months, one suspects, that there'll be some states where hospitalisation and deaths are increasing, and other states which are more pro-vaccination, where the reverse occurs and they start to come under some sort of control. I don't know how on earth folk can reach the stage where they cannot see harsh realities as potent as that.
No, well, you're a trained scientist, Doug, but there's no accounting for conspiracy theories.
There's not.
Doug Wilson talking about the breakthrough, maybe, maybe not, in Alzheimer's and malaria vaccine.